This is Audible.
Make Me Burn by R.G. Alexander. Narrated by Patricia Ducrose.
Chapter 1. Aziza Jane Stewart had two beasts between her legs. One was a motorcycle, and the other was pissing her off. The machine's engine roared as it came to a stop in front of the Greenwich movie theater, and she swung her leg over the seat, taking her hands from the hot, hard body that had given her so much pleasure when she'd snuck into his bed this morning. Brandon Nash, werewolf enforcer, undeniably passionate lover, and general pain in her ass. They'd only been an item for 5 weeks, and already they were running into problems.
Aziza.
Brandon turned off the engine and reached for her hand.
Don't go like this.
She stepped back, out of his reach. Like what, Brandon? Like I'm being stood up for the third time since we've been back in London? Like every time we're alone together, we only have time to slip in a quickie and a little pillow talk before you get a call for some new, conveniently timed wolfy emergency that you won't tell me about? She lowered her voice, glancing around the busy square. Like you aren't dropping me off for a playdate with Greg that you set up at the last minute, so you won't feel guilty and I won't get into any trouble on my own? Brandon ran a hand through his hair, and Aziza bit the inside of her cheek hard enough to hurt. It would be easier to get mad and stay mad at him if she could ever get over how irresistible he was. Brandon might be the best and brightest of the them police, but he still looked every inch her sexy, giant stalker. Everything about him heated her blood and turned her on. The way his muscular, broad-shouldered body dwarfed the large machine he straddled, that thick sable hair shimmering like silk in the late afternoon sun, his strong, tight jaw, and the dark, trimmed beard framing full, sensual lips. God, she loved to bite and lick those lips. Seeing the pleasure she gave him in those piercing, golden brown eyes never failed to make her heart race. Only now it was pounding with a frustration that matched the emotion in his gaze. What the hell did he have to be frustrated about?
Damn it, Aziza. I did that for you. You've mentioned Greg's busy work schedule, and I know you wanted to visit this cinema.
I wanted to do it with you. I don't give a shit about the movie. Werewolves know about romance, right? Or is it all, you're mine, fuck the flowers, and get on your knees? She asked, mocking his raspy growl. His eyes flashed.
That's not fair, Aziza.
Never mind. It doesn't even matter. She crossed her arms. Fuck the flowers and violins. They aren't my style either. But you can tell me why you're bugging out on me again. Does it have to do with the Janir this time? Razia? Isn't the enforcers being on high alert for the last few weeks something their vessel of fire should know about? Or am I still not allowed in the club until I bow to the big bad wolf boss and he gives me the secret handshake?
No, it's not Razia, and you don't need to know about this.
His tone was adamant, his shoulders stiff.
Yes, the Alpha has told the others to wait for his approval before interacting with you. But this isn't about you and my father. As I've told you many times, this is my job, Aziza. Something I've trained for. Why do you insist on pushing me for details? You'll notice I haven't asked questions about what you spent the night doing at that damn fetish club besides looking after your stray again. Or exactly what had you knocking on my door to satisfy your needs before dawn?
I noticed you managed to resist until about 2 seconds ago, she replied archly. You know I didn't do anything without you because I told you I wouldn't. You also know that if you came with me once in a while, you'd never have to wonder. And don't pretend I was the only one enjoying myself this morning. Your broken bed tells a different story. He closed his eyes and took a deep breath before opening them again.
Aziza, I know you're angry about the club. I want you to stay away from Underbridge for now. I think you should know.
The pocket of his leather jacket started to ring, and Aziza shook her head. I think you should answer that. It's important, right? It always is. Don't let me stop you, Enforcer.
Fuck. Damn it all. Greg said he would be here.
Brandon pulled out his cell to check the number and swore again before shoving it back into his pocket. He looked beyond her, studying the crowd.
I don't see him.
She laughed, derisively. Waiting to pass me off like a hot potato. I'm a grown woman, Brandon. I don't need anyone to take care of me, and I don't need or want you to tell me what to do unless we have whipped cream and a safe word. Greg will be here. He's a man I can always count on. She shooed him away with her hands. You should run along now before that leash gets any tighter. His face tightened.
You're my woman, Aziza Jane Stewart. Mine. You have been from the moment I first saw you, and nothing you say or do is going to change that. Stay with Greg. I'll call you as soon as I can, and we'll finish this conversation. There are things I need to tell you.
You're going to tell me something? That would be a nice change. If you can fit me into your schedule for more than a good fuck. His shoulders slumped in defeat at her words, and then he started his engine and headed back into traffic. Aziza watched him weave his motorcycle through the cars and resisted the urge to stomp her feet like a 2-year-old who wasn't getting her way. She didn't think it was wrong of her to want to keep one date they'd planned days ago. One scheduled date that wasn't a meal grabbed at midnight or a booty call. And she hated being kept in the dark about what the enforcers were up to. More than anything, she hated fighting with him. Was this what being in a long-term relationship felt like? What her mother had spent her life crying the loss of? Well, it fucking sucks, she muttered. She'd never been with anyone exclusively before. Never dated like a normal person. Her overprotective family had seen to that. Hell, Greg was her longest relationship with someone who wasn't a relative. But he may as well have been a fourth brother, so it wasn't the same. Maybe this was normal, and she should be flattered by Brandon's desire to keep her safe, and his attempts to placate her with gifts and playdates. But to be honest, there were times when his domineering behavior made her want to break something over his head. Unless they were in his bedroom. Or her bedroom. Or in the middle of the street, bent over the hood of a stranger's car with her jeans around her ankles, and her recently acquired ability to temporarily stop time being misused in the kinkiest possible way. Brandon's dominant nature in those cases had her screaming and quivering and begging for more. But those cases weren't happening with enough frequency in the last few weeks to stop her from feeling restless. And the passion between them, off the charts as it was, wasn't enough to ease her doubts about the kind of future they could have together. Hey, Aziza Jane! Greg's voice made her jump. Am I late for the movie? I got turned around on the tube. But when she faced him and he noticed her expression, he whistled. I must be late, or Brandon must have really stepped in at this time, because my badass super friend looks like she wants to burn the city down. She could. He knew it, and so did Brandon. They all knew what she could do now. You're fine, babe, and I don't even want to see the movie, she added resentfully. I hate movies. Right now, all I want to do is punch that British Dudley Do-Right in his perfect nose. You could film that, and I'll eat Milk Duds and watch it until I feel better. Greg's hazel eyes sparkled with suppressed laughter as he pulled her into his arms. Ah, poor baby. Is Tall, Dark, and Hairy too dedicated to saving humanity to cuddle over popcorn and romance cliches? She elbowed him lightly. Don't defend him. He pawned me off on you so he could go on a hunt. I could be helping. I'm supposed to be helping, right? But he won't even tell me what he keeps riding off into the sunset to do. If it's a basic stop, friskin' bully, or something more serious. And it's not like I can eavesdrop on his phone calls to find out. Damn werewolf language sounds like a cross between German and pig Latin. There's no Rosetta Stone to translate that guttural gibberish. They are a different species, Greg reminded her. But you're right. Not letting you jump into random fights with the criminal elements of the supernatural world is thoughtless of him. You should break up with that unforgivable bastard.
That'll show him who's the boss of you.
Thanks for pretending to be on my side. Aziza squeezed his waist affectionately and looked up at him. I'm a bad playdate, aren't I? I haven't seen you in days, and right away all I'm doing is whining about my love life.
Days? He frowned. We are crammed into one small flat with your aunt and, on a regular basis, your aunt's sexy werewolf girlfriend. Not that I'll ever complain about that particular fantasy come partially true. But other than the nights you spend at Brandon's, we see each other every day.
Seeing isn't the same as talking. You've been neglecting me for your laptop since we got back to London.
I'm sorry, Aziza. I didn't mean to. My work is relaxing for me. I'm useful, and it keeps us in fish and chips and those rolls shaped like hedgehogs you like so much.
She sighed. Greg was right, kind of. All told, she had enough inheritance money in the bank to keep them both in French fries and buttered rolls for life. But he loved his job with the corporate think tank, and he'd been neglecting it for over a year to be with her. His bosses were so excited to have their resident genius back that they express-mailed over everything he needed to telecommute from London within hours of his call. No, I'm sorry, I do understand. But you aren't the only one. Pin has a backlog of books she needs to edit, and when she isn't working, she's taking the snog train to Hillarytown. I'm kind of going crazy doing nothing but working out, reading about angels, gin, and shifters, and waiting around the flat for Adam's box to get here.
You spend time with Brandon, he pointed out.
Yes, and look how that always turns out, she muttered morosely. We're either fighting, making up, or avoiding any conversations that might lead to the other two by staying in bed. There doesn't seem to be any middle ground lately. I feel cheated. I think the honeymoon period people are always going on about is a whopper of a lie.
That's what you get for dating an enforcer, he said with a wry smile. Zero blissful ignorance and very little honeymooning. Although you did turn down the opportunity to spend more time with him when you nixed the option of meeting his father and training with his team as soon as we got back.
I didn't need werewolf boot camp, especially when saying yes to it meant they'd be able to make decisions about what I did with my free time. I'd rather work out at the hangar. And, if I recall, that was a choice you and Brandon both supported at the time.
Circus folk versus grumpy werewolves? Hell of a choice, Greg chuckled.
At least they're human. Aziza looked around and spotted a sign for a Greek restaurant. And the reason we came all the way to Greenwich to see a movie. One of the circus folks suggested it might have Spotty cell phone service so my date wouldn't get a work call. Obviously, it wasn't spotty enough. She didn't want to think about what Brandon was doing right now. Let's skip the theater and get something to eat instead. I'm in desperate need of comfort hummus. Possibly some ouzo. She took his hand as they walked across the street and went down a set of stairs off the sidewalk that led to a dimly lit, cozy Greek hideaway. This was one of her favorite things about London, the food. Not English food. Other than breakfast and those tiny sandwiches they made for tea, she wasn't a fan. But the Greek food, the Italian and Indian restaurants, to die for. The food here was better than any she'd had back home. The only thing they did better in Texas was barbecue, and it wasn't something she missed. As soon as they walked inside, she knew she loved the place. It was like a different world down here, intimately lit and relaxed, with none of the rush of most restaurants. The distinctive bouzouki music playing softly in the background made her think of intoxicating drinks and hot, sandy beaches and billionaires with secret babies, but that could be due to that one summer she'd spent on a romance-reading binge. A busty hostess with short, curly hair picked up two menus and led them to a quiet corner booth, her twinkling brown eyes focused on Greg every step of the way.
"Our best table for you," she said with a suggestive smile. "Very private."
Greg smiled back, just as suggestively.
"Efaristo."
"You're welcome, and the accent is cute,"
she said with a pleased expression and a thick accent of her own as she held out the menus.
"But it needs work."
"I'm a quick study."
"He really is," Aziza took her menu absently. "It's too bad he can't find the time to translate German pig Latin." Greg glared at her, and Aziza gave the confused-looking woman an apologetic grin. "I mean, He is. And do you happen to serve ouzo in this establishment?
Yes, of course. Excuse me, please.
When the hostess nodded and left without another word, Greg shook his head.
Thanks for that.
Aziza reached over and patted his hand. You can always come back and flirt with her later, buddy. I need that hunky shoulder of yours to cry on at the moment. He studied her, his expression both amused and concerned.
Yes, ma'am. Flirting has been tabled. Tell Saint King Greg all your troubles.
Saint King Greg. She smiled, leaning back against the soft fabric of the booth seat. She loved him. Handsome and familiar, and Greg. Greg with his sandy hair that always begged to be tousled, his perfect movie star smile that his family had spent a fortune on, and the hazel eyes that were always so open and ready to be kind. He'd been her best friend, her hero too, for as long as she could remember. He'd never left her or let her down, even when he thought she was headed for the loony bin. Even when her power was activated, her hands caught fire, and she started hooking up with men of the inappropriately paranormal variety.
Where do I begin?
A dour older waitress came to their table, setting down the bottle and two narrow shot glasses firmly, and then standing there waiting to take their order with a scowl and no hint of the hostess's flirtatious personality. After they hurriedly chose several items from the menu, she walked away and Greg got straight to business.
Let's start with the easy problem, your lack of a honeymoon phase. Personally, I think Brandon is trying to give you a break by not letting you join him on these hunts of his, by keeping you out of it. Has that occurred to you?
How do you know he's what I want to talk about first? She asked, pouring them each a glass of ouzo. And why in the hell do you think that's the easy problem?
He's usually what you want to talk about, and you get a certain look when you're brooding about him, he told her with a grin.
Then he sobered and lowered his voice.
But seriously, after all the shit that went down last month, the murders, our own twisted version of angels versus demons, him, it's a lot to take in.
Angels and demons, she snorted. I've read every one of those books you bought me, cover to cover, and all I can say is that the quote-unquote angels must have one hell of a PR department. Other than the glowing bits, they aren't anything like that in real life. The facts about demons, djinn, on the other hand, were fascinating and eerily accurate. Greg nodded.
And you just made my point. In real life. Aziza, in real life, you are dating a werewolf and you can set yourself on fire. You have powers I'd always relegated to the land of fiction and bullpucky. I've needed some time to come to terms with it, so I can only imagine that you do too. Maybe Brandon knows what you need better than you think.
Aziza sucked in her lower lip to restrain the pout she felt forming. She really wished Greg weren't defending Brandon. She wanted to bitch about her boyfriend, not empathize. He was right, though. It was a lot to take in. Ever since they came to England, she'd been confronted with the kind of new experiences she wouldn't have put on her bucket list in a million years. And the family curse she'd been so sure would strike her down had taken a strange turn. Not death. Not for her. Not yet, anyway. She did have powers now. She'd also learned she wasn't entirely human, and she'd attracted the unwanted attention of three species most of humanity lived in total ignorance of. She was fireborn. Justice. All that stood between the djinn and Nir decimating her world with their hatred for each other. She was a legend to werewolf kind, and the linchpin of some ancient damn treaty. She was a woman dating a man so dedicated to his job he couldn't even take her to the movies. Ye fucking haw. It sounded great on paper, but the fine print was a bitch, especially when it came to her life, her relationships.
Say Brandon is trying to give me a break, she grumbled, after taking a sip of the deliciously smooth, faintly licorice-flavored liquid.
That doesn't mean he's perfect. You have to admit he's got issues, especially when it comes to Ram. Ram. He was one of the two djinn assigned to watch over her. The one who'd tricked her into having sex with him to ignite her abilities. The same one who'd saved Aunt Pin from the Janir, Razia and Harash when they came after Aziza. He'd been exiled for his troubles, stripped of his powers and shunned by his people. He'd sacrificed everything for them. For her. That sacrifice didn't seem to matter to Brandon. He'd made his feelings about her protecting Ram clear. The only consolation he would give her was that he wouldn't allow the enforcers to take him in for questioning. Yet.
Okay, I'll give you that, Greg nodded. I can admit he's been a dick about Ram, but Brandon may not be able to help it. He was raised to hate them. Enforcers aren't exactly taught how to be politically correct when it comes to things they think are unnatural.
Aziza lifted her eyebrow. The nature versus nurture argument doesn't get him off the hook. Even if both told him to act on his hatred for Ram, and he still seemed to be restraining himself for her sake. For the moment.
No, it doesn't.
Greg paused and studied his silverware for a moment, as if seeking answers in the shining utensils. When he looked up at her with a forced expression of cheer, she knew he hadn't found them.
But other than your disagreements about Ram's rights and Brandon's wolfy work schedule, you two are doing great, right?
Other than those few giant red flags that I'm having a hard time ignoring today, yes, we're great. Which made it more frustrating. In so many ways, Brandon was almost too good to be true. Too sexy. Too perfect for her. Unless the topic of the djinn came up, or Ram, or Brandon's father, the Alpha, or her abilities and what they were doing to her. Aziza rubbed her hand where the sand from not just one vial, but two, hers and her brother Tariq's, had found its way under her skin. It was in her bloodstream now, and taking her over bit by bit with each day that passed. Confusing her about what she was feeling, what she wanted, what it wanted. If her visions were true, she still needed to find the last two portions that had been sent to her brothers Adam and Joseph. Needed to use them and take more of the mysterious power inside her. The Mayette could shape the sand, but no one knows how the sand will shape a fireborn. No one can see into the soul. The words in Greg's notebook haunted her. She had changed, and was changing a little more with each day that passed. Would accepting the rest of the sand transform her completely? Would Aziza Jane exist at all in the end? If not, who would she be? She was still trying to piece together what it meant to be her, as well as to everyone else around her, Pin and Greg in particular. They were the only family she had left. She couldn't let anything happen to them because of who she was or what she might become. Greg reached for her hand, stopping her restless movements.
About Adam's box, he began hesitantly. I hope you're not getting your hopes up too high about what's in it before it gets here. I mean, Tariq was actually in the land of the djinn myths when he was at your father's place. So it made sense when we found things that related to your fireborn side of the family and his personal effects. But Adam was in Colorado photographing snow bunnies when he...
Aziza smiled compassionately at his hesitation. It's okay for you to say he died. I'm not that fragile anymore. And yes, knowing my brother, I'm sure the snow bunnies were involved at some point. Maybe he was just doing a fluff piece for a magazine when Razia's people killed him. But there could still be something useful in the box. Like a vial, his portion of the black sand that contained a power meant for her unique family line, her inheritance from the fathers that she'd barely known, Zaid Amu.
And there might be nothing but a tube of toothpaste and pictures of nude women in hot tubs, Greg countered gently. You have to be prepared for that.
I am, but Greg... Adam never believed Tariq's death was an accident. Not completely.
He never said it directly, but I don't think he did either. He was too skeptical of the official report from Bahrain about the house fire.
Aziza rapped her knuckle on the table. See? He honored Mom's wishes by staying in the United States, but he was always emailing his journalist friends in Egypt, and he'd leave the room when he was on the phone with Joseph. She leaned closer and gave him a penetrating look. I think they must have known more about what was going on than I did. more than any of them wanted to tell me. Maybe they thought I was like her and couldn't handle it.
That's a theory you have no way of proving. If they did know something, they didn't share it with me, he promised. I was close to all of them, but you know I would have told you.
I know. But the little things she was remembering now made her more and more certain that her brothers, her mother, everyone had known more about what was coming than she did. Their food arrived, and Aziza instantly snagged a stuffed grape leaf and took a bite, chewing slowly. Even if you're right, and the box is a dead end, it's the only solid lead I have. God knows I can't seem to get an answer out of the men Joseph served with. My blood isn't telling me diddly right now, and my Karens are no help at all. Or I suppose I should say Karen singular, since Ram is still moping about losing his mojo, and Chev is missing in action. That only leaves my Nier to protect me. She blew a stray hair out of her face and reached for another dolma. Go Team Tay!
Letters to other countries, especially to military types, tend to take time finding their recipients, Greg reasoned. Plus, if anyone in his squad saw Joseph escape the blast and didn't report it, they might not be in a hurry to admit that omission. Be patient.
Gregory Prophet makes a valid point as usual. Tay's voice had Aziza choking on the drink she just shot back. And your singular Karen is doing everything that consensus allows to aid you. Gasping from Uzo going straight down the wrong pipe, Aziza looked at the Nier as Greg laughed and got to his feet, his eyes wide with obvious appreciation.
Look at you, beautiful. Are you taller? No?
He guided Tay into the booth and waited for her to slide in before he sat down beside her.
There is something different about you, isn't there? I just can't put my finger on what it is this time.
Aziza didn't even try to hide her smile.
Try cup size, babe. It looks like she's up to the third letter of the alphabet, and you really shouldn't put your finger on it in public.
When Greg sent her a chiding look, her grin widened. Tay's breasts were definitely bigger, and Aziza was fairly positive the change wasn't for her benefit this time. The Nier had changed her form more than once since they'd met. She'd been a creepy boy in a school uniform, a quietly attractive woman in her 20s, and a little girl attempting to escape Aziza's wrath. And the only thing they all had in common was their coloring. Pale skin, platinum hair, and the black, bottomless eyes of the Nier. This was the body she'd had the last several times Aziza had seen her. That of a young woman with modest 50s fashion sense and a fresh, innocent face. The look was still off, but far prettier than her previous incarnations. Angelic. If Greg's suppositions were true, the Nier were what ancient humans called angels. Only they weren't really messengers from heaven, just emotionless brainiacs from a parallel world who thought they knew everything, and for some reason hated the djinn as much as the werewolves did. There was nothing cherubic or heavenly about that.
So, Tay, what are you doing here? Aziza asked. Do your people have a fondness for dolmas you never told me about?
Tay held herself stiffly beside Greg and shook her head. I don't eat, Fireborn. I believed since the two of you were alone and the discussion was of some import, you would require guidance. Reaching for another bite-sized treat, Aziza smirked.
Since when did you think this topic was important? The last I heard, you were against my plan. In fact, weren't you the one who tried to trick us into giving you Tariq's vial because of the one portion of sand per customer rule?
I thought we were Team Tay now. Greg put his arm around the Nier's shoulders protectively. Ignore her. She's had another fight with her werewolf.
I know. Tay's voice reflected no emotion, but the way she glanced at Greg's hand was revealing. She is antagonistic but correct. The Nier were not expecting her to attempt a retrieval of all the vials sent out by the Keeper. As I've said before, the Zaman's allotment is exact. However, a consensus has been reached that while I may not aid the endeavor, I will also make no effort to impede the Fireborn's chosen course. I'm so glad you all agree on something you have no say in, Aziza murmured, refilling her glass. Tay tilted her head.
As to the Enforcer, from what I've observed, the time you spend defending your exiled Jyn Karyn appears to be the primary source of friction between you. Ram again.
No, Aziza corrected with exaggerated patience. Brandon's insistence on treating me like a helpless female and breaking our dates without telling me why is the primary source of friction. Weren't you paying attention? And are you advising me on my love life now, Tay? The Nier aren't exactly known for their empathy. Now, if my problem was statistics or taking over the universe, or if I needed Greg's brain fried with bolts of crazy telepathic lightning again...
Greg reached up to touch the single platinum strand hidden in his sandy hair, a direct result of said brain frying. To be fair, Tay had also saved him from Razia, so Aziza couldn't be too hard on her. Aziza sighed.
Okay, I'll accept that you can't help me with much of my search for sand, but have you found Joseph? Have you and Chev had any private meetings in the center of some town about getting Ram reinstated that you haven't told me about? Can you tell me what Brandon is up to with his enforcers?
No. Tay made no effort to specify which question she was answering. Aziza felt a vein pulse at her temple.
Then why are you here?
There wasn't much outward sign of it. Tay's large dark eyes were unblinking and her body still, but Aziza could almost feel the Nier's reaction. Hurt, insecurity, confusion. Surely that couldn't be accurate. Nier didn't experience emotions the way humans did, the way Jyn and werewolves did. She'd never felt or seen any sign of it before.
You feel it now. Well, hell. Now she felt like a jackass. She only had one Karyn at the moment and she was pushing her away.
Sorry, I'm just frustrated about everything. I wasn't expecting you to show up unless it was an emergency.
But it's a happy surprise, Greg chimed in. Right, Aziza Jayne?
Tay shifted subtly in the booth, away from Greg's hand. There is no need for fabrication, Gregory Prophet. I understand the Fireborn's frustration. And my arrival must add to that since I would second the Enforcer's warnings pertaining to the Jyn exile and the establishment he frequents. It may not be wise to spend much time there. Tay's shockingly dark lashes shielded her gaze, and Aziza could hear, could feel the care she was taking with her words. It suddenly dawned on her that they weren't concealed, that Tay was speaking with an audience of her peers listening in. Oblivious to the undercurrents of the Nier's words, Greg groaned.
We've talked about this, Tay, remember? Whenever you tell Aziza Jayne not to do something, it has the opposite effect. Trust me on this.
Aziza's lips quirked, but her mind was full of questions she knew Tay couldn't or wouldn't answer.
Damn straight, Tay. But I'll tell you what, the next time we go to Underbridge, you should come with us. I know you've watched us from a distance, which, by the way, is considered a fetish in some circles, but maybe you need a personal experience to enjoy it. With those new breasts and your new demeanor, I know a few men and women with whips who would love the challenge. Surprise, curiosity, fear. Aziza could sense it all before Tay attempted to remove herself from the booth. Unfortunately, Greg was blocking her escape. She glanced around furtively before nodding to Aziza. Perhaps we should continue our conversation another time? When she disappeared from view, Greg scanned the restaurant to see if anyone had noticed the abrupt, inhuman exit, while Aziza narrowed her gaze on the swiftly dissipating ripple of energy in the spot where Tay had been.
Weird.
Greg sighed heavily and lifted his arm, gesturing for their bill.
We should go and see how many people you can chase away with your mood by the time we get home.
So much for catching up.
You didn't have to be so hard on her, Aziza Jayne.
Greg kept his arm around her shoulder as they walked down King William Street. They'd taken the light rails from the restaurant to get to the underground subway station that would take them back to Penn's place. The Tube, they called it here. But that made it sound more confining than it already was. As if she were about to be shoved into a narrow casing,
and then squeezed out the other end like a sausage. They really needed to rent another car.
I know I didn't, but I couldn't seem to stop myself.
She was trying to help.
Bullshit, Aziza laughed. Did she ever give me a straight answer about why she was there? Did she give us anything new? No. She latched onto something Brandon said in our fight and used it as a reason to show up and test drive her expanding cleavage. And you, horn dog that you are, were more than happy to notice it.
I'm a man, Aziza Jane. I'm wired to notice. But there's nothing between Tay and me other than our desire for knowledge. Knowledge we need to help you, by the way.
What do you mean? She glanced up at him suspiciously. Have you... Greg, have you seen her when I'm not around?
He looked guilty.
Only once or twice. We've gone through my notebooks. The ones I wrote after she zinged me and before all those facts disappeared from my mind. We've gone through the books Tariq sent to the Stewart house about the ruins in the desert. She's not big on specifics. She really can't be without being hidden. But I know she's helping us as much as she can. She wants us to be ready, to be able to protect ourselves in case Razia and his cronies attack again.
What did books about buried treasure and ruins have to do with helping her? Aziza thought about her dreams. She'd seen the tops of great spires sticking out of the sand, seen the scorched earth around the buried cities. Was there something there she needed to find? But if there was, why was Tay talking to Greg about it instead of her? Greg is necessary. Tay had said that to her that night Razia almost killed Pin. But did his being necessary have to do with what was coming for Aziza? Or with Tay's obvious attachment to him? I think your creepy lost child is working on a crush.
Greg grimaced. And with that image, my night is ruined, and I may need to bathe in bleach.
Aziza opened her mouth to tease him, but was struck by an anxious, sick feeling. A cold coiling in her stomach. Her throat tightened, and she shivered. What the hell was that?
Greg?
Yes?
She saw the opening for the stairs leading down to the tube and tugged her jacket closer in the damp night air as she turned to face him.
Why did they stop?
He looked confused.
Why did who stop what? What are we talking about?
You said she wants us to be ready for the Janir, but we haven't seen or heard from them since that night. Why did they stop coming after me? According to Razia's overconfident villain monologue, they went to a ridiculous amount of trouble to make me the Fireborn, to make sure the broken girl who'd lost her family and hadn't known anything about her father's line was the only one left for the Sand to choose. They needed me so the treaty between the Djinn and the Nir could be broken, and they could have their psycho version of Utopia or whatever it is they want. If I'm so important, why all the radio silence? Brandon says there's been nothing, no strange deaths, nothing on the Enforcer radar. What are they waiting for?
Greg shrugged, but she could see by the look on his face that he'd thought about it before.
I don't know. You killed Razia's partner. Maybe he's in mourning. Or maybe your big pyrotechnic show combined with all the werewolf posse in the Cotswolds scared him away.
Or they were planning something new with which to torture her. Razia was still out there, along with the rest of his Janir brethren, free to kill again, free to target her loved ones whenever they chose. Aziza turned again and started for the stairs.
I have a bad feeling. I wish Ram's punishment were lifted, she said, raising her voice in case they were listening. Or Chev would show her face so I could punch it, accept her apology, and then find out what she knows. I can't believe the Djinn are keeping her away from me when my near Karen has been on the job, potentially filling my head with anti-them thoughts and attempting to seduce my best friend with her breasts.
Too bad Tay's presence hadn't been more helpful tonight. Aziza had hoped it would provoke some response from the Djinn who always demanded equal representation with the Fireborn. Maybe Ram, even as a powerless exile, was enough in their eyes. It was possible, but she didn't think so. She put her hand on the railing and began taking the steps two at a time, before the view in front of her made her stumble. What the hell? The stairwell had become a whirling tunnel, a shimmering whirlpool of strange, swirling white light. She reached out to touch the air in front of her and gasped when it rippled like water against her fingertips. Through the waves, she could see someone standing at the foot of a golden staircase, staring up at her with tears like diamonds glistening on her cheeks. It almost looked like... Chev? No, not Chev. But the dark-haired woman had already disappeared before she could find out, the stairs morphing from gold to gleaming silver from one blink to the next. A tall male Nier appeared at Aziza's side and blocked her view, bending to look into her eyes. Too close. He was studying her as if she were a lab rat he was going to dissect. His skin glowed as if it lit from within, but his cold, black gaze made her scream. Aziza fell backward and familiar arms caught her just in time. Greg.
Aziza Jane! Can you hear me? What the hell was that?
Gone. It was gone. All she saw was a normal set of stairs leading down to the underground tracks. No Jin, no Nier, no world but this one. It had happened again. A momentary psychedelic flash of the two alternate dimensions that she'd been thinking was one of the side effects of taking more than her share of the sand. She hadn't told anyone about them but Greg.
Aziza Jane, if you don't talk to me, I'm taking you to the hospital. You look like you're about to pass out.
I'm fine. She shook her head, pushing away from him and walking carefully down the stairs. I saw them again and got dizzy for a minute, that's all. This was the third time it had happened. She didn't count the glimpse of the gin she'd gotten at her family home in the Cotswolds after Brandon had taken her on the dining room table. The day she'd learned she was the gin's favorite soap opera. This was different. It was more intense. As if the veils were being torn open against their will. As if she had no control. When she reached the bottom of the stairs, Greg grabbed her arm and turned her toward him. Poor Greg. He deserved a break from the insanity. Deserved to crunch his relaxing think tank numbers and stare at perky breasts in peace. Unfortunately, crazy kept finding her and dragging him along for the ride. He frowned.
You saw them again? Both of them?
Yes, one right after the other. I saw Tay leave earlier, and the way the air rippled after she was gone, but it wasn't the same. This isn't the same, she thought woozily. The strange nausea that always followed the experience rising in her throat. She always got sick to her stomach. But this was almost violent. This felt wrong. Something is wrong. I think we need to find a place to sit down.
I've got you.
Greg wrapped one arm around her waist and walked her toward the benches that lined the curved enclosure. The walls across from the tracks were covered in colorful advertisements that weren't helping her find her footing. She sat down and closed her eyes. It should have passed by now, but it's getting worse. Greg sounded worried.
What should have passed? The nausea? What are you feeling?
What you feel isn't life. It's death. Death is nearby, unnaturally caused. There it was. Another thought in her head that didn't feel entirely like her own. Another side effect that was happening more and more often. But she could sense that it was true. Something's wrong. She pushed away from his touch and stood, weaving and clutching her stomach. What was she missing? And then she saw it. Look around. It's not even 10 o'clock at night, so where is everybody? There were people on the street, but no one's down here with us, waiting to go home. This place is empty. Aziza heard Greg's steps behind her as she walked closer to the tracks.
You're right. I don't think I've ever seen any of the stations empty.
He paused and lowered his voice.
Wait, there's someone, but she's not looking so good.
She turned to him, then followed his gaze to a young, red-haired woman draped in some kind of pale robe. on her knees as if in prayer, right at the far edge of the platform. The woman's head was bowed so her matted hair concealed her face from view, and she wasn't moving. Aziza couldn't tell whether or not she was even breathing. Greg? He didn't need to ask her twice.
I'll see if she's okay.
As Aziza watched him move closer, she knew nothing was okay. Her stomach was twisting so violently, she worried she might actually be sick, but she couldn't look away. Greg leaned down beside the woman and touched her shoulder gently.
Miss! Miss, are you ill? Do you need help?
He stepped back with a gasp. His face twisted with horror as the woman fell backward. She landed on the floor, the loose robe that covered her slipping off to reveal a naked body, every inch of it marred by bruises and knife wounds.
Jesus! Aziza! I think she's dead.
Chapter 2. Another Gift from Death. Aziza's nausea faded, and she realized this was why it had come. She'd sensed this victim, and the presence of her personal Grim Reaper, Razia. She'd known it before she'd seen the body. She glanced down at the palm of her left hand, but saw nothing. No symbols. No burn marks. She'd read about djinn who were drawn to death, and part of her was djinn. Was it that? A new fireborn ability? Or just gut instinct? She'd seen dead bodies before. Bodies that were disturbingly reminiscent of this one. The couple lying posed on the street. The old woman dressed all in yellow and affixed to the wall outside of her aunt's flat, her mouth stuffed with roses. Reminiscent, but not the same. Aziza didn't make a sound as she moved closer, staring at the woman's wounds. Cuts had been carved into her skin, some deep and some shallow, too many to count. She should be covered in blood, but her wounds appeared to have been cleaned, as if to show off the designs of the marks. A few reminded Aziza of the symbols she'd seen emerging from her hand the night she set Harash and the large pond on her family's property ablaze. But these weren't the same symbols. These were meticulous patterns beneath grotesque splatters of now freshly flowing blood. Fresh blood. The woman moaned. She was still alive. The noise set Aziza in motion, and she pushed past Greg to kneel beside her.
Call an ambulance! She's alive! She's breathing!
Poor girl. The detachment Aziza had forced herself to feel for what she'd assumed was a corpse was now ripped away by the horror of her survival, however temporary. There was no way anyone could come back from this. Who was she? Aziza could tell she was young and female, but whatever she'd looked like before was a mystery. She'd been mutilated, her face swollen and covered with cuts and bruises, and the rest of her body was worse. The things that had been done to every part of her. She leaned closer.
Can you tell me who you are? What happened?
When the girl gripped her arm, Aziza gasped. Suddenly, she could feel every deep, piercing cut as it had happened. Hear the girl's silent prayers for mercy, and she knew the terror that came when she could no longer move, no longer resist. It was unbearable. Tears streaming down her cheeks, Aziza curled over the victim's body, weak from their shared agony. She blinked away the moisture to focus on her lips as they moved.
They won't stop until they have her,
the girl gasped. Damn it, if she could only stop time for this girl until the ambulance got here. But it didn't work like that. Time stopped everywhere, and for everyone but the person she was touching. Why couldn't she think of a way to fix this? Where was the justice in letting an innocent die? Justice will ensure her killer shares her fate.
I don't know what to do,
Aziza said, her voice thick with emotion.
I'm sorry. I don't know how to fix this. Just hold on, okay?
Aziza, Greg called out. I can't get a damn signal. I'm going to the street.
She nodded without lifting her head. The woman's eyes looked into hers, then past her, glassing over. When her hand dropped, the pain Aziza was sharing instantly subsided. Whatever she was looking at now, she didn't see Aziza at all.
Oh, God, please hang on.
She... The girl's whisper became a choking cough, blood staining her lips from the wounds inside her that Aziza couldn't see.
She must be freed.
Free her. She'd heard that before. The Janir had done this. Razia had done this. According to him, Aziza was the key, the her they needed. They'd wanted her, wanted to take her with them to bring about their plans. Razia had called her the center of the storm. But why kill this stranger? Had Aziza met her gaze on a busy street without realizing it? There had to be some connection, but if so, she had no idea what it could be. All she knew was that, once again, she had blood on her hands. More blood. Razia and his people wanted their precious Fireborn to know they were back for her. And the girl in her arms was there dying? She glanced down at the still body with a sob. They're dead, messenger. She rocked the girl against her, silently berating herself. She'd asked for this, practically begged for it. When everyone else was breathing a sigh of relief for the respite, Aziza was edgy, restless, waiting for the other shoe to drop, for the next body to fall from the sky. Now she'd give anything to have been proven wrong. No one deserved this, and for what? To serve as another of Razia's love notes? It didn't make sense. Aziza heard a growl echo in the darkness. But before she could do more than stiffen, she was dragged away from the lifeless victim and slammed against the wall. Her head rang and her vision blurred as one large, hot hand wrapped around her throat, while another bound her wrist together in front of her with a slender length of braided chain.
Got you now!
Aziza struggled in her attacker's strong grip, kicking out with both legs as he taunted her.
Smelled your stink as soon as I got down here, whore, even with all the blood. Is this how you get off? Get your kicks by slicing them up and making sure you're the last thing they see. I know you're not the delivery girl. You gin love to get your hands dirty. Did you plant another present for us to find?
He was a werewolf. It was the only explanation. He was too large, too strong. Unfortunately, he wasn't her werewolf. When she opened her mouth to speak, he squeezed her throat, cutting off her air.
No, he muttered, his fingers tightening around her neck. You don't get to talk, demon. I don't care if your papers are in order or if you're the rutting queen of them all. I've stopped you from killing any more human girls, and I will be the one to kill you, after you admit you had partners. Admit you've made friends with a shiner, and don't lie. I can smell them on you, too. Then tell me how the demon exile helped you murder them all. Do that, and I'll end it fast. Otherwise, I'll tear you apart slowly and take your head to add to the Alpha's collection.
Shiner? Demon exile? Ram? Where was he getting this? Where was Tay? Chev? She needed help. They wouldn't all leave her to die by werewolf.
Help me, damn you!
Aziza couldn't breathe, and both his tight grip and her anger made it impossible to speak. She had no other choice. Lifting her chained wrists, she gripped his forearm with her hands. Burn. The blue-white flame burst out from her skin, and he dropped her with a sharp cry, jumping back to stare at the scalded flesh on his arms before focusing on her in fury.
How the fuck did you do that? He snarled. You unnatural cunt! How the fuck can you use your tricks in those chains? How can you use your powers on me at all?
She untangled the thin links of gold and iron and dropped them at her feet, holding her arms out wide, and watching his eyes narrow in fear at the flames that still licked her fingertips. That was better. Her smile was mean and steady, but her mind was in turmoil.
You must not get the Wolfie newsletter, Fido. I'm the fucking vessel of fire, and I'll give you more of a chance than you gave me before I fry your furry ass and take your head back to your alpha. What did you mean, them all? Have there been other victims? Other murders like this one?
The large man staggered in shock, bending on one knee and lowering his head instinctively.
Vessel, forgive me. I didn't realize. You smell like...
All of them and none of them, I know, she muttered. I get that a lot, although I've never heard it described in such an unflattering way before. The point is, you didn't stop and wonder why. You assumed I was Jen, and for some reason I can't understand, you assumed a currently powerless exile who happens to be under my protection was my accomplice.
The werewolf jerked his head up.
You're vouching for a demon? Protecting it? But you're justice. You're the true
enough.
The female voice broke through the shadows, and then a tall, beautiful woman lifted herself up easily from the tracks and into the light. She sent Aziza a hesitant smile, the kind of smile a cop offered to someone about to jump off a building.
Aziza Jane Stewart, with respect. If you'll disarm, we could focus on the true criminal's trail before it grows cold.
Disarm? She looked down. Her hands were still burning.
Hot air balloons. Greg and Joseph. The impossible woman dangling in midair.
As she focused on calming herself, the flames diminished and then disappeared altogether. She was still shivering as she clenched her hands at her sides.
You know my name.
The woman nodded without holding out her hand for introductions.
And you know mine. I am Natalie Stanton. I would have introduced myself under better circumstances, but you understand, I've no doubt, my obedience to the Alpha in all things.
She studied Aziza intently. Shock is a natural reaction for those unused to the barbarisms of the djinn. Know that Brandon is with your Mr. Prophet as we speak, so you don't have to worry about him. He, at least, is safe.
Natalie, the woman who'd spied on them.
At the door to the interrogation room, on the Stewart family land, Natalie, the eyes and ears of the Alpha. Dressed in street clothes, jeans, t-shirt, and leather jacket, she made the ordinary outfit stunning. She was tall, runway model tall, with full high breasts and thick mahogany hair that fell in a perfect braid to her hips. Everything about her was flawless. Another beautiful fucking werewolf. And Natalie, of all people, attempting to, what, console her?
Yes, I know your name. How do you know where Greg and Brandon are?
She'd obviously come from another entrance, the same one Fido had used since neither of them came down the stairs beside the body.
Natalie held up a cell phone and her lips curved upward. Special. What was the word you used? Wolfie? I quite like that. Special Wolfie phones. We always get a signal, and there is a rather ingenious chip inside that makes it impossible for anyone else to use a cell phone when the need for containment arises.
Then her smile faded.
And to answer your question, yes, there have been two other victims. This one is our third.
Aziza was in sensory overload. Maybe Natalie was right and she was in shock. Her hands, caked with blood dried by her fire, were shaking harder now, tears drying on her cheeks, and fingerprints of pain still bruising her neck. Three deaths. Three times. Three girls dead because of her. Because she hadn't killed Razia when she'd had the chance. She was still trying to pull herself together when Brandon leapt down the steps with animalistic grace and urgency and pulled her into his strong embrace. Aziza! My Aziza, where were you hurt? What are you doing here? When I saw Greg, I thought...